So this is interviewing Frank Gardner on 21st February, 72, 73, at Bonn. So you say that...
Well, the first thing actually was before that, when I was a student. Last year, we spent some time at Radio Physics. That was from about September 45 to March of 46. It was in about February of this paper on the cliff interferometer observations of the spots in the sun first came.
Right.
And that was, I think it must be about one of the first sort of papers where they sort of started to do the sort of fully transforming. And
yeah, I think it was the first, yeah.
Well, then the next acquaintanceship was when I went to a colloquium in 1947, which was somewhere about January, when Bolton described these observations of Cygnus. This was also at Dover or Colorado, one of the beaches. I think it was around 100 megahertz, but I forget now. But this sort of showed that it came from a point source, I think, sort of under 4 minutes of arc, or under...
Something like that. This was...
And from such and such a direction. Well, this was sort of a follow-up from the result which Hay had found in 1946. He'd found that when looking in the direction of Cygnus there were scintillations on
He deduced a size, or an upper limit.
That there was some small diameter.
Right.
But then with the interferometer, it was, just sort of call it a total power record. The thing went up and down, but...
Mm-hmm.
And then from the minimum to the maximum ratio, you can turn the size. They only had one frequency and one cliff top, so...
Only one cliff top. Well, it's facing you.
Yes. So much. But this was adequate for this experiment, and from then on the subject sort of developed.
What was your recollection as to how much this was all believed, or what people thought it was?
Oh, I don't think people had very clear notions of the sort of mechanism that might be involved. The idea, even at that stage, was to try and get the position more accurately so that people could look for
optically.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at that stage, in the radio physics laboratory, no one, well, there were very few people who even knew what right ascension and declination were. But then this came.
But the decision had been made to emphasize radio astronomy. To some extent, had it not after the war?
Yes, but I think that this is probably the case. Yes, well, I had started to do observations of the sun. So, Pawsey,
right, so you mean
Ruby Payne, Scott, and Simon.
So only the people that were directly concerned with that knew what right ascension was anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, before that, it was just a radar.
Right.
So it was a development center. Well then... Well, then at the beginning of 47, there was a number of other projects which were somewhat related to radio astronomy. Frank Kerr was looking for echoes from these particles between the sun and the earth, which were never detected. And what else was... And there were also these high frequency observations starting on the moon. And the planets.
Was this negative result for the particles ever published?
I'm not sure. But I don't think it would be terribly significant.
Yeah.
I think people have gone down to very much lower levels now.
Well, but I mean, now it might not be significant, but I mean historically it might be.
Well, you'd have to ask Frank Kerr what the numbers
are. I just can't remember. I have talked to him, but I can't remember if he mentioned that or not.
Well, 1947. Then when I came to Cambridge at the end of 47, Ryle was there. They'd been working on the sun mainly with it too, the element interferometer. So the following year they had improved their sensitivity. Well, in 46 I think it was the Ryle and the Bomberg system of getting a self-calibrated receiving system. Mm-hmm. And then in 1948, they started work on the radio sources.
What was your reason for going to Cambridge?
Oh, it was sort of to do ionosphere work.
Ionospheric work?
Yes.
But was Ryle's group also?
No, Radcliffe was in charge of the radio laboratory in Cambridge, mainly ionosphere. But Ryle had been at TRE with Radcliffe during the war.
I see.
And he made the arrangements for Ryle to come back.
So you were sort of on the edge of radio astronomy at Cambridge also.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, of course, they detected Cygnus again, but they also detected Cassiopeia, which was stronger sound. Then they sort of gradually pushed on to sort of getting more accurate positions and introduced this sort of phase switching interferometer, which I think it was about early in 1949 before that came into operation. And then the two historic theoretical papers of Ryle, which appeared in 1949, one of which said that the radiation from the sun at 10 to 13 degrees or something at 200 megahertz, whatever it was thermal.
Yeah.
And there's another one on polarization, both of which were completely wrong, weren't they?
Polarization of what?
Of the solar radiation and so on. That one was using, magneto-ionic theory, but so the correct things were sort of given later or about the same time by people like Smerd at Westfold. Minette also did a number of calculations of these
things. I see. Smerd was involved with solar radio astronomy as early as then.
Yes, well, Smerd had been at Birmingham working with Oliphant's group, sort of, on that part of the war. And he came out to Sydney from 1946. And with the idea of working in the valve section, but he was still there when I went to Cambridge, but when I came back he changed over. I don't know whether he did have any background on the sun before that, but by the end of 1949 he did. Well, during all this sort of period, Pawsey was a person who sort of ran the laboratory, continued to do this until sort of 1961, when he was going to go to NRAO.
Right.
There'd been, probably from the early 1950s, there'd been differences of opinion between Pawsey and Rowan, who was the chief of the division. So I think this sort of came to a bit of a head when Pawsey got the FRS and so on. But there's no doubt that almost all the developments at radio physics were largely due to sort of Pawsey, because he was by far the best person I've ever come across for sort of running a sort of research group. And he was also very good in sort of getting sort of the best out of people. He had this method whereby people came to talk to him about some problem. He'd sort of often propose some other way of doing it. And often, I don't know how serious he was on some of these, but it was, from this point, it was sort of easy for the person who went to see him to see some other alternative method which would mm-hmm. work. I think this is sort of
very valuable.
How most of the things that radio physics sort of developed. I mean, he took an interest in everything, went on, read every paper.
Now he was, Bowen was head of the whole CSIRO.
Yes.
But
Division of Radio Physics.
Division of Radio Physics. And
with particular interest in the RAIN work after the war.
And Pawsey was?
Just in the radio astronomy.
Head of the radio group?
Yes.
Part of it?
Well, the radio astronomy group. Yes.
And he was definitely headed for the States, more or less, when he died.
He was, yes. Yes, he was going to be the chief.